Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the 2019 Youth Education Conference, held in Williamsburg, Virginia.
Thanks very much, and thanks for coming this morning. I want you to know that I speak on college campuses often, and have for 30 years. And I have become more and more aware of the homeschoolers on campuses for many, many good reasons, and enormously impressed. So I want you to know I have nothing but respect and high regard for you all and your folks, because the outcome is amazing, absolutely amazing. All right, what I want to do today, I want to talk for maybe a half hour, but then it's going to go to questions. I'm going to try to give you at least 15 minutes, maybe more. If you don't have questions, I can keep talking. But I think the best part of it is the exchange. The best part of these opportunities to be in front of young people is for you to have an opportunity to talk to me, ask questions about what it was all like. I've spent the last, I began my experiences in politics when I was in graduate school. And that's what got me into it, actually. I took a leave of absence from McGill University. I was getting a master's degree up there. So I took a leave of absence and worked for Richard Nixon a long time ago. And that was the year of Watergate, actually, for those of you that know that history. But that wasn't the key point. The key point was I was up in Montreal having a wonderful time, did my first year. And my brother was involved. He would work for Richard Nixon in the White House. And he recommended I take a time, 6 months, take a leave of absence and get some experience in politics. And that's what I did. I went and worked in that campaign. And let me tell you what it was like for me to go from being a student, not much older than you all, and walking into a political campaign. It was so different than any other job or experience I'd ever had. Because there was an energy level in a campaign, an excitement that's just in the air. Everybody looking towards the next opportunity for your candidate to move ahead, either in the polls or in a primary or in a state or get an endorsement. That's just constantly challenging and exciting to be in a campaign. Instead of going in every day, there's lots of young people. Because they can't afford experienced players, so they hire people with not much experience to do most of the work. And you go in, and I noticed that no one was talking about the latest movies or TV shows. They were talking about, did you see what Governor Jones said yesterday? I can't believe it. And I would be like, Governor Jones said what? And I would realize, what is going on here is so much more interesting. And I would start reading the paper I read before I went to work then. I started reading Washington Post cover to cover. That's where I was working and where I lived. And you would realize the significance of the governor saying this, you know, and pretty soon I would challenge myself to know more, to be able to be part of this conversation as these young people were exchanging ideas constantly, talking about the issues in this environment of a political campaign. And so at that stage I said, this is the most exciting thing I've ever done, you know. We went up to that time, at that stage the primary was over, but we went into a general election. And every day something was happening and things were hopping. And you just worked day and night up to the election. And then you saw what happens. But it can, and so in that sense, it was the most exciting thing for me. And I knew this is much different than anything I had done, and this is what I wanted to do. So I spoke to my brother, who, as I mentioned, was already working in politics and was working in the White House at the time. And I said, what's my next step? And he said, look around, find candidate. But you find a candidate that you believe in, who shares your ideas, your principles, your beliefs. Because you don't want to work for somebody because you think he's going to win. He's the front runner. That you lose all that excitement. It just becomes a job as a way for you to promote yourself. You want to work for somebody who is part of a cause that you want to be part of, that you find is important to you. And so that's what I did. I looked around, And I started to think of different candidates that might be running for president in the next few years. And I went to Nixon's inaugural in January. He was elected a second time the year I helped him in the campaign. And I went to the inaugural parade. And in the parade, you have all kinds of activities, all kinds of different bands, etc. But the governors usually come down in a car or in some kind of a float or something. And so all these governors are going by. Well, it's freezing cold, January in D.C. So they're inside a car, and you see on the door, you know, Governor of Iowa, you know, like, okay, good, you know. But then somebody came down, and he had the, he was able to stand up in the car. So he had the open window on the top of the car, you know, and he was standing up, waving to people and looking at him and laughing. And I thought, who is this guy? And as he came near me, I was right on the curb, he pointed to me and smiled like, hi, hi. And I was like, whoo, he just said hello to me. Well, long and short of it, that was a technique he used, I learned later. Very smart technique. It was Ronald Reagan, governor of California at the time. And he was tall and impressive looking and confident. And he was happy. He was so content. You know, the rest of them are inside a cold car. He's out there having a good time, pointing to me, thank, hi, hi, how you? And so I said, I got to look into this guy. This he stood out to me. And he touched me. He looked at me and made contact with me. So I said, who is this guy? And I learned that Ronald Reagan at the time, governor of California, was an up-and-comer and was looking to run for president. So I had, that was it. I was working for Ronald Reagan. He was conservative. I was a conservative. He was bigger than life, and I decided that's where I was going. A couple years later, he announced his candidacy. This would be in 75, and I watched for a while, and then I said, I'm going, and I got myself on that campaign. We lost badly, but that didn't matter because the excitement he created in this country for the cause he believed in, as he traveled around the country, we ran against an incumbent president, Gerald Ford, because Richard Nixon had resigned from the presidency under scandal, and his vice president had become president, who was Jerry Ford. And so he was running against an incumbent, and Jerry Ford won the primary and then lost the general. But that primary, those 6 months, of us losing every Tuesday as primary state came up after primary state, we lose. We finally, after so many, we won one. The place was wild. The excitement in the office was crazy. We believed this guy could do it. It was a long shot. And anyone who really understood politics knew it was a long shot. But that didn't matter to those in the campaign. We believed in this guy. We believed everything he said. And it was something so exciting to be part of. And when we lost, I decided I was staying with him. Everything he said meant to touch me, everything. I just said, this guy is so proud to share my views, to be to lead me, to be part of this cause that I so much believe in. And 4 years later, I stayed with him, worked with him in different capacities, and 4 years later, he won and became president. So that's, and then I worked with him in the Treasury Department for several years. So I was with Ronald Reagan for about almost 10 years. And what I learned, other than just this part of this career move of mine, which just challenged me and made me focus on what it is I believe and how important these beliefs are to me, and was I willing to stand up and fight for them under real duress? Did I have the courage of my convictions? All of these things came to me during this time. And I looked at him and realized that he taught me so much, Ronald Reagan did, because he was under enormous, you know politics are ugly, you see it every day, you read any paper you want, you turn on the TV, and you know it doesn't matter if you are left or right, there's incoming every direction, and a lot of it's extremely ugly. So he stood tall and with a smile on his face during all of that. It didn't bother him. He knew there was another side. He knew they didn't agree with him. That didn't matter. What does that matter? I mean, that's what America's about. We have an opportunity to debate the issues so that both sides are well represented out there, and the American people can choose which they believe is closest to what they believe. That is how it is structured. And the way he stood tall and held firm, and he had passion. He so believed in this country, which was his cause, in essence, this country, that he inspired a nation because he let them know he believed in the people, that it wasn't just about him becoming president. In fact, that really wasn't it. It was just him being there so he could do things the American people could then again begin to work and take care of their business. And he turned the country around. He literally inspired a nation to get back up on their feet because we were down and out for many, many years prior to that. And just within months, before his policies ever were implemented, this country was working again and starting new businesses and inspired and encouraged. One man made an enormous difference. So one of the lessons, many of the lessons that I learned, but just one clearly, was how much one person can make a difference. Don't ever dismiss yourself as, what can I do? Don't ever believe that. It is totally false. You can make an enormous difference in the lives around you if you're willing. If you're willing. I sat with Reagan when he was president. We had a luncheon, and I had the opportunity to be next to him during this luncheon. And so I was talking to him, and he had there was an attempt on his life. He was shot a couple months earlier and was recovering. And so I commented to him how the whole country was so happy, you know, that he was recovering, that it was something that is now in the past and that he was doing so well and was back. And he said, "Bay, I know I'm on borrowed time." That's the understanding he had of why he was here. "I'm on borrowed time," he told me, "and the Lord clearly has something else for me to do before I move on." And he remained president for the next, at that stage, it must have been 7 years or more. It was really early in his 8 years. So those things meant something to me. But politics at the same time is, without question, one of the most brutal directions you can choose. Absolutely, totally rewarding, brutal, difficult, tough, can change your life for the worse if you're not careful. Why? First of all, the hours are incredible. You know, you get in a campaign, and you could be there till 2 a.m. and be expected to be there again the next day at 8. I mean, things just don't stop for you. You don't have time to go home and rest and do whatever you do in the evening. I mean, this is a full-time job, often, not every night, but often. And there's an expectation. We don't have enough people on a campaign, so everybody's working twice as much, long as you might otherwise. But there's more, even deeper reasons. And that is, while you may be part of this team for all the right reasons, because you believe in your candidate or the cause, it doesn't have to be a campaign, a candidate campaign, it can be an issue campaign, it can be a cause. But there's some people that are involved, many people are driven to politics because they see it as a fast way to get up the ladder. And it is. I mean, I went at 32, we lost in 76, I was just out of 1976. I was just a few years out of graduate school, and I was working as an accounting office, the accounting office of the campaign, and I talked my way into being the treasurer of the campaign 4 years later, and then I asked the president when he won to name me treasurer of the United States. So I went from within 10 years of graduating, I was treasurer of the United States, which is a nice little lift there. You know, it was downhill ever since, but not to worry. You lose a lot, all right? You work 12 months, 9 months, as hard as you can, weekends, you see a poll comes out, your guy's up, you think, okay, we can win this thing, this is amazing, then a poll, you're not doing swell, oh, gee, then your candidate makes a mistake that's critical, and it's all over TV, and everybody's going underground, trying not to just shaking their heads. It is, you have to know who you are, what you believe, what is important to you, and then you have to fight for it. I was with Romney I've done a lot of TV, had my TV show, had a radio show. And so I often am one of the faces for candidates. I do their surrogate. I'm a surrogate. I do the TV. I did that with Romney twice. And so I was with Romney doing a lot of TV in D.C. And something he said in a private meeting that was taped months before but was held for the general election was a statement which is completely factual. What he was saying is he did something candidates should never do, and most of my candidates do it, so you just get used to it, is they shouldn't analyze. They're not there to analyze what is happening. Well, I think, you know, in New Hampshire, the conservatives are going here, and these guys are going here, and I think if we reach that, that's not their job. That's a campaign manager's job. They're supposed to tell you what they believe and where they're taking the country and hit the issues. But because they are in politics, because they're smart, they analyze. And that's when they get in trouble. Anyhow, that's an aside. So he was analyzed. Somebody asked him, how's he going to win? And he said, well, you know, the country's divided 46-46, you know, and so I'm not going to worry about, you know, the left and the, you know, liberals. I'm not going to worry about them because they're never going to vote for me. And he could have added, you know, and I'm not going to worry about the conservatives because I got them, you know, I got the Republicans. But there's the middle ground is where I'm going to reach, okay? But he said it, I don't care about the left. I don't care about liberals. Or he said some word that basically said, you don't care about the poor and the rich, or the poor and the needy, you know. And it's not that he doesn't care about them, but he wasn't going to win their vote. They are in the backyard of the Democrats. So basically, it was, you know, I don't know the exact words he used, but, you know, for instance, it would be inner city, black communities tend to be very Democratic. Like 98% of the black community in the country vote Democrat. So that's not an area you would target if you're a conservative, right? It doesn't mean you don't care about them. It just means that this is a campaign I'm trying to win, so what am I going to focus on? So he made the explanation. Then it got blown out, put on television. I think the bartender taped it. And it was a private high donor fundraiser. So now it's on TV. And they're saying, he doesn't care about the poor. He doesn't care about the needy. He doesn't care about minorities. And it's like there's nothing. No, no. So I had, you know, I just said, fine. I defended him and they kept putting up charts and things. And I just defended him and defended him and defended him and said, you're just misrepresenting everything he said. But you're in a total defense because they keep putting this up and keep pushing it. And it hurt. It definitely hurt Mitt Romney. But are you going to just say, people are saying to me, well, that was a dumb thing to say. Well, you know, have you ever said a dumb thing? Do you believe in your candidate? So when they say something dumb, are you just going to disappear and say, my gosh? Or are you going to say, that doesn't matter. He's this great guy, and I'm going to figure out a way to defend him, and I'm going to fight for him because this is what I believe in, and I know what the other side's trying to do, and this is politics, and I'm not disappearing. That takes an enormous amount of courage to just keep with the cause. And how do you do that? How do you not get discouraged, get knocked off? Because there's so many lies out there. You're working for a guy who did nothing wrong, and the next thing you know, they are lying about them. And then other people will come to you, how can you possibly be working for that lousy racist? And you're like, what? I'm working for a racist? How did that happen? He's a wonderful guy. What are you talking about? But that's how they turn it. So it is extremely difficult. I ran for office in California. After I was treasurer of the United States, I ran for treasurer of California, political office there. And I was running against an incumbent, uphill battle, and I was doing very well. So I read one day, LA Times, huge paper out in Los Angeles, huge circulation, A3, prominent place. Candidate for treasurer has bad credit rating. And the story is about me. Well, guess what? I don't have bad credit rating. I didn't have bad credit rating. I had absolutely perfect credit rating. But here's a headline, bad credit rating. Well, how many people are going to vote for somebody who wants to be treasurer of state with bad credit rating? It was completely fabricated. So I go to church that morning, and people are looking over at me, and I'm thinking, I don't believe this. Here's the story. Now, everybody's wondering about my bad credit rating, which doesn't exist. And we went to the LA Times. I showed them all the credit ratings. And they said, oh, well, it was a rumor out there. Well, why didn't you call me first? You know, that would be the appropriate thing as a journalist. You call both sides to see. No, they didn't call me. They knew it was a bad story, but they wanted to bring me down. All right? And they were enormously successful. So I was felt so angry that this is such an unfair thing. I knew the media wouldn't be for me. I knew the press wasn't. But you don't have to make the stories up, right? Well, I run. And so I was out running saying, how do I get over this? I just got to get this passed. And I thought, what does my brother do? My brother's run for office and been the target of many, many false attacks. And I said, he laughs. He just laughs it off. And I said to myself, okay, you need to start laughing. You just need to say, it doesn't matter. They do their worst, I do my best. It doesn't matter that they want to bring me down. I'm not going to let it become some kind of anger in me that I can't get past. I can't control what the other side does. This is a very important lesson in life. You cannot control what the other side does. And this is politics 101. They beat the life out of you. They'll say everything about your candidate or you or your cause. They will personally attack you. They will bring, you know, they often say, Mitt Romney had such a perfectly wonderful life, enormously respected, whether you agree with him politically or not. I disagreed with him on several issues. I just happened to think he was the best out there at the time, and I thought he was fabulous. I met with his opponents in business, and they had enormous respect for him. I mean, the man had earned a stellar reputation. And I'm on TV to debate his health care. Up in Massachusetts, he had a kind of Obama-like health care. It's a legitimate issue. So is he really for Obamacare or not because he did this in Massachusetts? It's a legitimate debate. But then when I'm down there, they don't mention that, and they say, well, he's a felon. I said, he's a felon? What? He did something with the SEC, he didn't do this. 2 weeks later, he's a tax evader. I said, what, do you have his tax return? No, everybody knows he's evaded his tax. It's just made up. So every time I'd go down to defend him, to debate a legitimate issue, Obama versus Romney, it turned into a personal attack on my candidate. Absolutely false. So how do you get past this? How do you get past it? You have to just know who you are and what you're there for. And you're there to do your best. And Romney knew he was there to do his best. And if they wanted to do this, he cannot stop it, and nor could I. So I just defend him and challenge their premise as much as you can. Call it outrageous, but it doesn't mean you go quiet. It doesn't mean you go as if, okay, this is really bad, they got us. Now, they don't have us. There is something I learned from my brother, and this is what causes are all about. In fact, Teddy Roosevelt addressed this. There's a great, great article by Teddy Roosevelt that I think defines politics better than anything I've ever read. And the speech itself is way too long, but there's about page 3 or 4 has 4 or 5 paragraphs that are phenomenal. It's called The Man in the Arena. And those 4 or 5 paragraphs basically say, look, you're in an arena, and the ones on the field down there in the arena are fighting for what's good. They are fighting to make a change, to make a difference. You could be from the left, you could be from the right. It doesn't matter. They are trying to change things, to move things to a direction that they think are better for the nation, if you like, all right, or for the community, whatever the cause is. And people are throwing stuff at each other. People are knocking them down. You're getting brutalized. People are stomping on you. You're losing sometimes. He says, the key is you get back up. You don't quit. You just keep getting back up. You wipe yourself off. You say, okay, what can I learn from that? I lost that round. What can I learn? And then you make yourself stronger and more determined. You don't get off the field. And he goes on to say, That's who life is about. That is who the strength. Those are our leaders on the field. The ones on the side, the media, the critics, sit there and laugh and point. Look at a dumb thing they said. Look at a stupid thing they did. And they criticize. They make no difference. All they do is criticize people. They're not on the field. They don't put themselves out. To be a candidate is an enormously difficult thing. You're asking to be examined from day one, all the way back to where you are, high school. Did you do anything dumb in high school we could write about? Any of your friends or enemies want to say some nasty things about you? And we'll have that for a day or two to talk about. That's what you're doing. You are putting yourself out there because it's not about you. It's about what you're trying to do. Move the cause. Fight for something that's more important than you. And that's politics. And he talks about the man in the arena being the person. And I was on TV. There was a couple candidates in the Midwest. I believe they were running for Senate or governor. I believe it was Senate. And they had great backgrounds, and they had great reputations, and good families, and wonderful people. You could tell. These are just solid Americans, just decided to go from whatever position they were in to run for Senate. And they were asked about the abortion issue. Now, I've been in this debate of abortion since Roe v. Wade passed in 1972. So I know it. I know it. I know if a person says, a candidate says it in a certain way, I know right away, okay, he's fudging, he doesn't want to tell you he's not pro-life, or he is pro-life, you know. I just know the language. Well, these candidates didn't. They've been debating the issue. So they were asked an awkward question. It was a got me question. That if they had been in the debate a year, they would have known right away. And so they tried to explain it rather than just say, I'm pro-life, or this is why I'm pro-life, or this is why I'm pro-choice, whatever it was. And they just answered it awkwardly. Well, you should have seen what happened to them. They were ripped apart. The people from our side, their conservatives, were just saying, how stupid can you be? And I just thought, this is somebody that's put themselves out there. They just made a terminology, just a slight error in explanation. Because of this issue is so sensitive, if you do that, the press will just come right down on you and the critics will come. And they lost. And they had the heck beat out of them as if they were just fools. And why would we put such dumb, stupid people forward? These were classy people, wonderful people, who had already accomplished an enormous amount, were reduced to just being the subject of nothing but criticism for a turn of phrase. That's it. Now, that's why I mean it's so tough. But then do you just stay out of it? Do you not get involved? That's what they're hoping. So if you have strong beliefs, I saw a question that was thrown amongst those things you all wanted me to address. And then I'll go to questions. But it's called political correctness. And they say, you know, okay, you don't want to be offensive to anyone. You don't want to say things that offend them. But maybe our beliefs are different. And when I say it, they'll be offended. You gotta get past this. Politics of intimidation is what we have lived for years. And in the last couple years, people have said, I've had it with it. And it started with Trump when he went on the debates and said, I'm not politically correct, get it? And everybody's like, holy schmoly, I can't believe somebody said that. And he's clearly not, okay? And so more and more people are energized saying, hey, I'm just gonna say what I believe too. And the politics of intimidation is such that the other side can go either way here. It can be the left intimidating the right. It can be the right intimidating the left. I'm not suggesting that it is one way. But the idea is, although I've received it from this side, I have been called racist so many times now, I answer to it. You know, it's like, oh yeah, but did you need something? Because that's what they do. They don't argue the issue. Whatever the issue is, they don't argue the benefits on their side. They call you names, so they intimidate you, so you are hesitant to say anything. And if our side, that being my side, is hesitant to talk about it, then they won, didn't they? So whatever issue you take, if they can intimidate you from being a voice for that cause, they win. They knock you off. That is the politics of it. Why debate it if I can just shut you up? Why should I have the debate? And the reason they don't want the debate is because large numbers of American people agree with you. So if they have the debate, these large numbers are going to go with you. So we want you just not to say anything, not to talk about it, and then we're set. We have an opportunity to reach into these large numbers because they've not been motivated by you, and pick them off. All right? It's politics, and you fall for it. And it is un-American for anyone to be intimidated from speaking what it is that they believe. So that is what is this political correctness is about. It's to control one side, to control what you say, how you say it, and when you say it. And that is un-American. So how do you get around that? Because nobody wants to offend people. Number one, you have to make certain that what you believe is for the purest of reasons. So I take very tough stands on immigration. Well, I know exactly why I believe it. I think this is best for America. I think my position is best for America. I understand the other side. I understand that they have some good case, good strong arguments, but I think mine is more important, okay? So I'm not going to have that debate. But the purpose is, so when I express myself, you call me a name, well, that's not a debate. And I know for a fact I have no mean-spiritedness in me. So how do you handle it? I'm sure you don't know, Donna Brazile is a liberal Democrat. She was the head of the Democratic Party for a while, very close to Obama, very close to Hillary Clinton. She and I debated each other for 6 years, 2-3 times a week on CNN. And I would go out and travel, going to different places for speeches, and people would stop me in the airport and say, how can you stand just being next to her? And I'd be like, whoa. She's my friend. She's a great person. What are you talking about? Donna and I were very close. She was so kind to my youngest, who was in high school at the time. He used to wait for me in the green room till my show was over, and we'd go home together. And she'd come in and chat with him and talk to him. He loved her more than he loved me, and which wasn't saying a lot at the time. But, she just was, she's good people. That's it. And I love her dearly. And we disagree on everything. And we'd be on TV, and she'd say something like, come on, Donna, and I'd punch her. Yeah, you know that's not true, and she'd laugh. You know, you have to make certain you have no hesitancy loving those who disagree with you and showing it. None whatsoever. What's it matter? I went to lunch with somebody the other day, a client who dumped me, and he was going to be a client, and he dumped me, and I knew why right away, because his partner didn't like my politics. But what do I care? He's gay, and he has a gay partner who I met, and they were that was the end. As soon as I met the gay partner, I knew I was done, and it was because of my politics. Well, what do I care? I had lunch with him, I was laughing, I told him I hoped everything went well, Ken Fiber can be of help. I love this guy. I don't care if he makes different choices than I do. That's not my business. I'm not here to judge. I just want him to know I love him. That's all I care about. He knows whatever happened, and I'm not as comfortable. It doesn't matter. That's minor. You have to be comfortable to show those with whom you disagree that you can, that you like them, that you can be good friends, and that you hope them the best. But by the way, you're so wrong on this issue. You know, what's the big deal? Have that sense of humor. Have that sense of humor, and don't be intimidated. But do not let them keep you quiet. Because you can change lives, just as Ronald Reagan, by speaking out, inspired a nation and turned this country around. You can change those around you. You can uplift them. You can give them guidance. You can put a seed in their mind that they never thought about. And 4 years from now, they say, you know, she was right. This didn't work out so well. That is what we're here for, is to touch others. But you never back down from your beliefs. And the only way you can be strong, to have the courage to stand up, is to know who you are, what your beliefs are. Understand the other side and recognize, wait a minute, I am certain that this is where this nation should go, or this is where what I believe. And you become certain of that, and you have the boldness of it, and then you're all set. Otherwise, it's going to be a tough, tough go, because the pressure comes from every direction. And let me open it up now to any questions that you have. I cut out some of your time. Is this a question here?
Yes, it is, ma'am.
Yes.
Ms. Buchanan, right now there's a bill before the U.S. Congress, the Equality Act, and which includes no provisions whatsoever to preserve religious freedom.
Mm-hmm.
What can we in this room do to preserve religious freedom in America?
The first thing you can do is exercise it. is make certain that you're outspoken and that you that nobody tramples your religious freedom. The government, it's very clear that the government is there not to give us our freedoms. Our freedoms come inherently. They're from God. We have these freedoms. Government is to protect them. And so if you see any kind of infringement on them, that is when you have to find the cause where you can make a difference. And it will never pass the Senate, you know, and Trump would veto it. So we got some controls there. But there is now, without question, an effort in this country to take away our religious freedoms and force upon us to do things which would go absolutely in direct opposition to our beliefs across the board on many, many fronts. You have to, number one, become aware of it, and you have to be ready to stand up and support those who are fighting it. I hope that it addresses it. Okay, let's go right here and then over here, young man. Go ahead.
So how do foreign countries influence our own politics? For example, China's a big money way. How does that influence our own politics?
Well, the first thing you have to know is anytime there's a lot of money involved, I'll guarantee you there's influence. And what happens is they'll see key senators, key governors, key elected officials in different places, and they will fund their campaigns. We can't take foreign money in campaigns, but they will figure out a way to put it through some source. And that way, the person is beholden to them. They want to keep that money coming, because the one thing you will learn, unfortunately, about our business, about this business, is that once elected, too many of our elected officials decide that their number one priority is to stay elected. And money is how they do that. So if some defense contractors start funding them, all of a sudden they vote very well when it's defense contractors. It's just called it's lobbying and influence. The foreign problem is a little different. The good news is it's against the law for them to put any money into campaigns. So you know that's at least makes it more difficult and often easier to catch them if they're trying to move any large sums of money into it. It basically is, you have to just keep an eye out. I mean, that's the federal government, you know, the Justice Department is theirs to make certain they don't influence foreign elections, and states have an obligation to make certain they don't influence state elections. That's the law of the land.
And is there any chance that threats against our country may be a contributor to...
That what against our country? No. If there's any kind of direct threat, and I was the campaign manager, I'd go public, and you'll win. You know, they got to be careful. You can't just suddenly threaten somebody, then you go public and say, listen, you know, this foreign government has done this and this, and you'd obviously get protection. That would be very damaging to that country and very positive for your campaign. You know, that's the kind of thing that really brings the voters out, and they won't tolerate that. The good thing is American people do not want anybody influencing their elections other than themselves. So you've got that on your side. In Russia, all that talk about Russia, and there was an effort to influence, they influenced not one vote. That's all their little funny businesses sending in little messages through the internet. It didn't influence a vote. Yes? Oh, I'm sorry, you were next, but I'll go here and then I'll go, I promise. Go ahead.
During a lot of the elections, why does it seem like all of the political media is pointed towards the liberals and the conservatives compared to any other off parties like the libertarians or the Constitution? Yeah.
The reason is the media is going to focus on who's going to win. Third parties do not win. And unfortunately, I've been involved in third party politics, and you may as well not even be out there. You can't get media. And if you can't get media, you can't win. Because free media is key, you know, to get the word out, who you are, what you are, what you're all about, what you stand for. And the two parties will keep you from getting in the debates because they don't want a third party. They want one of the two of them winning. Right here. Good question. Go ahead.
All right. So if they were to take away religious freedom, would they have to change the original documents made by the founding fathers?
No. They wouldn't change it. What they would do is they would get some kind of bill something that went through the states or Congress, and then would be challenged at the Supreme Court level, and the Supreme Court would uphold it. Once the Supreme Court upholds a bill, which could come from the states, and then go through the different districts, court district, federal, in the different court systems, all the way to the federal court. If they upheld it, then that becomes law of the land. Or if Congress were to pass something, it would be challenged. And if and the president signed it, now it's law, it would be challenged. The Supreme Court would make the decision. All righty, I think there's a gal here, and then we'll go back there. Yes?
First of all, I want to say it's amazing to be here for you. Thank you so much for coming to class.
Thank you.
Also, you talked a lot about holding on to your beliefs and standing up for what you believe. But I was going to ask you, how do you get the right sources? Because it seems like Fox News is one thing, CNN is this other thing, and then other small, being Google, they all say all different things with tons of bias in between the lines. So do you have to just read between the lines, or how do you get
That's an excellent question. It used to be bad. Now it is horrendous. It used to be that, you know, the networks were there and you knew they moved to the left. They would kind of push the stories a little bit to the left, or they wouldn't even do your stories. Conservative stories wouldn't even get to the TV, you know, so you wouldn't know about it. And now it is just what they put on is absolutely false. I've been on debates with left sometimes where I'm debating just something like education, you know, money for education, or some school issue. And on the left completely makes up a stat, a statistic. Completely, and I literally like, what? That's not even true. Oh, no, yes, it is. Yes, it's true. Well, how am I going to debate something that's completely false? All right? It is bizarre how much false stuff's going on. So your perception is excellent. You get a sense, you know, what I do is I'll read the conservatives. I read, and I can get a sense. I read left. If I'm going to do a TV show tonight on guns, I read no gun, no handgun guys. They want no guns for anyone because they are very passionate. They've got the issues down. I want to see what they're saying. Is there anything new that's developed? And then I want my side, you know? But the key is you have to know what you believe. And in order to get there, you have to know both sides. You have to reach out and listen to people who disagree with you and say, well, that they made a good point there. How do I justify on my side? Maybe you agree with them, actually, once you learn more. Maybe you don't. You know what I mean? But you kind of know where they're coming from. Once you have firm beliefs in some principles, then you can take it from there because these things will bounce off you as true or false. But you have to read outside. Find columnists you trust. You know, they might be a conservative columnist, but he lays it all out and makes the case. Thomas Friedman is somebody I disagree with most of the time, but he's New York Times. He's a liberal, okay? He bugs the heck out of me. He's brilliant. But then he writes about war, and I happen to be anti-war with him. And I say, this guy's brilliant. He's absolutely, I hit it. Oh, excellent. You know, gives me great lines. All right? He's good on trade, too, I noticed today. But you're going to have to do some homework and find out who else is there. I want to get one more question in here. I'll go right back there, I promised you.
So do you think it is better to have only two political parties or a bunch of political parties?
Well, I'll tell you what. This is a very good question. The problem with two parties is that both parties at times, now is not the case, but years ago, both parties realized there was controversial issues, so they came to an agreement on them. And pretty soon, everybody believed in taxes. We believed in big taxes, and I say we because I'm a Republican. Democrats believed in little taxes. Clinton passed tax cuts, okay? And then it goes on trade. And they all kind of both were on the same side of trade, and both supported the war in Iraq. And both, well, you don't have any distinction here except on social issues. That was the only thing that was left. And people used to say, Republicans should give up these social issues because they're so controversial. Well, then we don't only have one party, don't we? All right? So then what happens, and this happened in Canada, the two parties never would talk about immigration. They did nothing for years on immigration because it's too controversial. You'd look like a racist if you took this position. The press was all over you, so you just did nothing. And Canada, which has a much more vibrant third party possibility, one party came out on this issue that the other two parties did nothing on. And it was like a nobody. And he came out and said, we're going to do this. And the party, he put together a party that had 4, 5, 6, 10%. They won. because the other two parties would not address the most serious issue to the people, because the people, they didn't like that issue. And so all of a sudden they won like huge numbers, and the other two parties were threatened. Well, guess what? One of the other two parties picked up the issue. So it keeps you honest. It makes the little guy who has a problem out there that neither party will agree to, it gives him an opportunity to pick up enough steam to convince the other one of the big parties to grab it. I am out of time. Thank you all very, very much. The questions were excellent. I appreciate your coming today.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.